This world is awfully big. Girl, this time you're all alone. But it's time you started living. It's time you let someone else do some giving. Love is all around, no need to waste it. You can have it down, why don't you take it? You might just make it after all. You might just make it after all.
Hi, Ed, how are you?
Fine. Who's
it's, it's Mark Snyder at PNP Network.
I'm sorry I was indisposed when you called before.
That's okay. How are you?
Are we live?
We are, yeah.
Oh, my God. I really wasn't indisposed. I was bending over.
Well, that could be even worse.
Let's
keep the indisposed part in there instead.
All right.
How are you?
You're on.
We had you on a few years ago, if you remember, when you were doing some stuff with Nick at Night, I think, when Mary Tyler Moore was on there. Had you on the show and enjoyed having you, so I figured I'd do it again because this is a great little movie that's out there. It's called Missing Brendan, and it also stars Adam Brody of the O.C.
Right, right.
Yeah.
The little shaver has done well for himself, hasn't he?
He certainly
has. All because he met me.
Is that the reason why?
Undoubtedly.
Yeah, Ileana, too. I assume that meeting you was the moment of her life as well.
Well, for a while there, I wondered what they were doing when they went off for those long walks into the jungle.
This is it's a very interesting movie, and actually, I think very timely, because of the times we're living in right now. Tell the folks out there what the movie's about.
It's about the decision by two brothers, one a rich one, one who went to Canada.
Talking about during the Vietnam era.
During the Vietnam War.
Right.
One who, I guess, served. It's a little hazy for me now. The son of one. The one who did serve. To go back to Vietnam and conduct a search with the help of a fellow from the unit. To search for a missing brother and son.
Right, so what it is actually there are three sons. One was a conscientious objector in Canada, the other one, the other two who served, one survived, the other one did not.
Right.
And you are the grandfather. And
I'm the paterfamilias.
The what?
The paterfamilias.
Exactly, yes.
And there's Adam plays the grandson.
Yes, and Robin Thomas is your son, one of the sons who's there.
Right.
His father.
Right.
And it's a very interesting tale, and I think that it really is a gripping story.
I think what's nice about it is it brings a dysfunctional family, if you will, that overworked word, and brings the family together in an isolated place, call it an island in the world, and the self-discovery and the communal discovery that goes on between them makes them a communal family once again.
Right. Yeah. Where was this thing filmed? It's a really interesting venue there.
We filmed them in the jungles of nearby L.A.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I mean, it had to be a Vietnam double, but it's pretty convincing. It's very well filmed, I thought.
Yeah, we worked hard, and I suffered, God knows. I don't scramble like I used to. it worked well. I certainly thought the cast was wonderful. I thought Adam was wonderful, and Robin and Richard were wonderful, and
Harold, everybody did a nice job.
What's that?
Harold, everybody did a good job.
Ileana was was her usual excellent self.
Yeah. And tell me a little bit about Christopher White, how he put this thing together. This was really his film.
I know. I mean, for an not-so-practiced pro. He got together a wonderful story, and Eugene did a nice job in cohering us.
He was the director, Eugene Brady, right?
Eugene Brady.
Yeah. So, I mean, they really did a nice job. And I was kind of surprised to see it on DVD, because this actually, I think, could have done okay in the movie theaters.
Well, it's a jungle out there. And it looks like DVD is, under the proper auspices, is sometimes the safe way to just cover all bets. And not undergo the ravages of distribution and the insecurities of shopping it around.
What is the top-selling Ed Asner movie, the Ed Asner film, on Yahoo Movies? Do you have any idea?
Well, I think Elf has done fairly well, I imagine.
But actually, they have as their number one. This is very interesting. It has the top-selling Edwin Asner films, click to buy at Yahoo Shopping. Number one is Batman the Animated Series, Volume 1.
Are you kidding?
No.
I'll be damned. That is funny. That is funny.
And at number five is Batman the Animated Series, Volume 2.
Oh, God.
And in between is Moon Over Parador, The Wrestler, and JFK.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
They are not at the top of my list.
Yeah, but they're at the top of the list on Yahoo, though. Isn't that interesting, though? Because it's what people buy on video, sometimes different than what they saw in the movies, because they might not have seen it in the movies.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, Moon Over Parador was kind of a lark. Paul Mazursky directed it.
Uh-huh.
And I played myself, of course.
Oh,
once
cool.
Again, a jungle was involved. The Batman stuff is cute.
Yeah, you seem to do well in the jungle or in the newsroom.
Yeah, I haven't done much in the Arctic.
That's the
only
next
thing I can claim to the Arctic is a little movie I made with Sally Struthers called Hey, I'm Alive.
And that one's not on the list.
I made that up in the Yukon.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that on video now?
I don't know.
You have to find out. If it's not, you have to put it out on video and make some money.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
I would like to have some coupons to clip in my latter years.
There you go. Now, this movie, The Wrestler, I don't think I've ever heard of that one before.
Well, this is a film financed by the big professional wrestlers, primarily in the Midwest, but I think Vince McMahon also had a hand in it.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. The Vince McMahon Sr.
Okay. Oh, the senior. Okay.
Yeah. And they all got together and put this money, and I think it was a means of trying to put a human face on the. This is before The Rock and all those people into being, and give a human side to the wrestlers.
Now, what did you play in that movie?
I played a manager.
Ah, okay.
Who is threatened by thugs.
Uh-huh.
And most of the... Vern Gagne was in it. Dick the Bruiser, the Crusher. Andre the Giant. So many of the old wonderful characters of the two generations ago, let's say.
Yeah, that was actually a fun time in wrestling. I used to watch then. Nowadays, it's just... it's just garbage.
I know.
It's kind of sad.
You need a program, don't you?
What's that? We need what?
You need a program to see who's...
Yes. There's too many people, and they also have too many stupid things going on. There's a lot of TNA, which, you know, I have nothing against TNA, but it doesn't really amount to much wrestling.
Yeah, well, they're all preferts. I can remember when I was a little tyke, I went to Memorial Hall in Kansas City, Kansas with my dad, and I saw the Blimp wrestle, and I saw the Angel wrestle, and it was awesome.
It was fun. We used to go to Boston Garden with my dad. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Now the Boston Garden's no longer around, and, you know, times have changed.
Who were the big timers there?
Well, we used to watch, like, Hulk Hogan and Jimmy the Superfly, Snuka, and Chief J. Strongbow. And there was always one guy that always used to lose every match, a guy named Spaceman Hickey. I remember those days. You know, I was watching the Happy Days reunion a while back. They just had it on a few weeks ago. It was great. And I'm just thinking, is there ever a chance maybe for a Mary Tyler Moore reunion like that?
Well, my son has become a DVD producer, and he made the first year DVD for Mary Tyler Moore for Fox.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the best produced DVD I've ever seen. They didn't advertise it. They didn't promote it, so it didn't sell well. And the material they had for the succeeding seasons was phenomenal, but they decided to shelve future efforts. So I doubt whether there will be a reunion. First of all, how much of a reunion can you do without Ted?
Well, yeah. He just used him in clips, though, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of show him in clips.
He just got back from China where he did the second year DVD, I think it's the second year DVD, of Kung Fu with David Carradine.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So he's really into that now, huh?
Yeah.
I'm a big DVD guy. I mean, I collect TV shows. I get a lot of them here, of course, to review. And I just love kind of reliving the Happy Days, the Laverne and Shirley's, the
yeah.
You know, Mork and Mindy's, all the shows, and David Carradine's another one, you know. Shows you grew up with that really, some of them, they look great now still, just like they did. Mary Tyler Moore Show was a great show, and will hold up 30 years from now.
Oh, sure.
You know?
He's also done very well with the DVDs he's made of the Dukes of Hazzard.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, of course, that'll probably have a huge lift in sales when the Dukes of Hazzard movie comes out.
They did very well with the first one.
Yeah. Well, they'll even do better when the movie comes out with Britney Spears or Jessica Simpson, I guess it is.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, that'll probably do quite well. I want to talk to you a little bit about growing up in your childhood, because we were just talking about my childhood a bit. And I understand that when you were growing up, you were pretty much the only Jewish family in your neighborhood.
More or less, yeah.
Was that a difficult thing? I mean, I assume you learned to fight quickly. My father was in a similar situation, and he told me that he learned to fight when he was 10, 11 years old, or self-defense, self-preservation.
Well, I started out until the beginning of the second grade. We lived in what was called the Bottoms of Kansas City, and I lived right across the street from Armour's Packing House. We moved to White Bread Village when I was in the second grade.
White Bread Village?
Well, that's what I referred to.
I was going to say, wow.
It was, so that the fighting was not a necessity where I moved to.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't encounter a lot of prejudice. In Kansas City, Kansas, I often spoke of it as there was discrimination, but it was gentle.
Mm-hmm.
And though I knew some, being a, you know, a kind of a loner, unique, being Jewish, it wasn't severe.
Well, you were also an athlete as well, and that helps a lot. I mean, you played football and basketball and stuff, right?
That really didn't happen until I got into high school.
Yeah.
Because every day when I was younger, I would finish grade school, and I'd have to get on a bus and a streetcar and go to Hebrew school. So I wasn't able to go play the outdoor sports with my buddies that they were indulging in.
Mm-hmm.
That isolated me enormously.
Yeah.
So finally, when I got into high school, I said, "That's it." I was bar mitzvahed, and from here on out, I gotta have some sports.
So you played football, and again, my son is a quarterback, and he has been for 5 years out here. And it's unusual for a Jewish kid to be playing football. Most Jewish mothers don't even allow it. But in your case, you did play football. Didn't you guys win a championship as well?
Yeah, we were the city champions.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
What position did you play?
Tackle.
Ah, okay. So you were always a pretty big guy.
What's that?
You were always a pretty big guy.
I weighed about 180.
Yeah.
I can't say it was hard-packed muscle, though.
You know, it says in your bio here, I wanted to know about this, that you organized a basketball team which toured most of the liberated Europe. Tell me about that.
Well, I was stationed in France, and it was a small 180-man post. And the captain, a wonderful man named Zut, decided to get the guys together and let them do basketball. So we went out and we started practicing, and then all of a sudden invitations from French villages start to come in. And naturally they appointed a big hulking 6'4" guy from Kentucky who couldn't find his ass with either hand, was put in charge, and the captain could see it was going nowhere. So he asked me if, and I happened to remark, you know, where the problems lay. So he said, well, why don't you handle it? And I said, okay, if I can have so-and-so as an interpreter. So I took it over, and we had about 8 guys who were good. And we started playing the French teams. We were so out of condition. And as we played more, we got into condition, and we started to beat everybody around. And it was a wonderful cross-section of Americana. A guy from Chicago, a guy from Gary, a guy from Salt Lake City, a guy from Brooklyn. And by the time I left, that little team, I think, took second in Europe in Army teams.
What year was that? Do you have any idea what year that was?
That was 53.
So this is all, this is kind of between wars, right?
No, Korea War was going on.
Korea was going on?
Yeah. Fortunately, I was fighting the Koreans in France.
My dad was actually in Korea.
Yeah.
With the Marines.
Yeah. He knew combat.
No, he sure did. He didn't want to talk about it too much, but he knew it.
Yeah.
So how did you end up going from the military, coming in there, and then, you know, I guess you moved to Chicago, and that's where you kind of really get into the showbiz, right, with the Playwrights Theater Club?
Yeah. I had gone to the University of Chicago and started acting for the first time in my life while I was in, it was extracurricular at Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And I met Paul Sills while I was at the university, and while I was in the Army, he wrote me a letter saying, come back and join us, we're starting a theater. So as soon as I got out of the Army, my life was settled. I went back after a week at home and spent 2 very productive years in Chicago performing in front of audiences and got that greatest of rudimentary training and became, in my opinion, qualified as an actor.
What was your big break? Did it come after Three-Penny Opera, which was, I know you were off-Broadway with that for a while. What was your biggest break in terms of TV, movies?
Well, I kept thinking this was going to be the big break, that was going to be the big break. Nothing really happened until Mary Tyler Moore came along.
Really? I mean, I know you were in Slattery's People for a while, dramatic series.
I did the first 13 episodes there and saw that nothing was going to happen with me there, so I asked out of it.
Huh.
And they very generously let me out of my contract.
And I found one thing I thought really interesting looking at your bio. I saw that you were in Elvis Presley's movie Change of Heart, Change of Habit. And
yeah.
I remember that movie also starred Mary Tyler Moore.
Right.
So you actually worked with her at that point.
No, we never met each other.
Really?
No, well, it wasn't until we started doing the series.
Huh. When you tried
actually,
out for...
I had also done a Presley movie before that, which was Kid Galahad.
What was Elvis like to work with?
He was very nice. He was a very nice guy.
Yeah.
And worked hard and did not act like a superstar. Did what was asked of him and cut the mustard.
Did he kind of hang with the cast? Did you guys get to hang together or did you go in his own way?
No, we didn't hang together. With Kid Galahad in those days, he was into his big karate phase. who was going around with bandaged hands all the time, breaking bricks. And he had a huge entourage of good old boys following him around.
Yeah.
By the time we got to Change of Habit, the entourage had kind of faded away, and he had become much slicker. But still a nice guy.
Now, you mentioned the Mary Tyler Moore Show, of course. That's where everybody knows you and loves you from. That that character was it was an irascible but lovable kind of character, Lou Grant. When you tried out for the role, did you realize, first of all, it was a comedy, but there was also some serious moments to it as well. But did you ever think it would be the iconic program that it turned out to be?
I didn't know about it being an iconic program, but I knew that it was the best character and the best scripts I had seen in the 9 years I had been in L.A. It was just juicy, wonderful, wonderful material.
Did Miri have a say in the casting? Did she?
She may have oohed and aahed, perhaps, but I don't think she ever overruled or dictated.
Yeah. So, I mean, the cast, at least the show, it seems like you all got along well, and it was really a true ensemble, kind of like the New England Patriots, a real team. Was it really like that in real life?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We loved each other. I refer to it as 7 years on the yellow brick road.
You got 3 Emmy Awards during that time, too, which is kind of nice.
Very nice.
Yeah.
It felt good.
I remember you in the miniseries Roots. You were a mean son of a gun.
Oh no!
Oh yeah.
I'm doing my job.
Yeah, well, I know that. That's what the character was. But
the job happened to be a slave ship captain, but I was just doing the job.
And you played evil very well.
Yeah. Rich man, poor man tended to make me look more evil.
Yeah, I remember that one too. Yeah, but then you got your own show. You went and they took the character of Lou Grant and brought it onto that drama series.
Probably the hardest mistake ever inflicted on me in my life.
Really? Why is that?
To go from a 3-camera live comedy into a 1-camera drama, more or less, is like going from the moon to the sun. It would have been so much easier just to create a new character and start over. When we first opened, people tuned in to Lou Grant thinking they were going to see a comedy.
Mm.
So it was a very big adjustment on the part of the audience. Nobody in the show had ever done an hour show before. So that whole first year was a learning experience. We didn't know if we were going to ever last.
Mm.
And it was a very difficult process.
Turned out to be a pretty good show, though.
Oh, I was very proud of it.
Yeah, I mean, I still remember that the character Animal was always an interesting character, that
yeah.
guy. You know?
Yeah.
But it was a character study just the way the Mary Tyler Moore Show was. The characters were very well defined, the writing was good, and that's always what makes a good show.
Exactly. It was a character-driven show. And the subjects chosen to pursue in terms of Lou Grant were also subjects that you did not find on any other show.
That's true. Well, it was kind of a liberal type of show. It did have a stance.
A liberal show, and yet it did go to pains to try to present some aspect of the other side.
Hmm. When that show got canceled, though, it was widely reported that you thought it was a political move by the network rather than something based on ratings. Do you still think that now?
Oh, sure.
Yeah?
Yeah. I became outspoken on our activity in El Salvador, propping up a murderous military government that was killing peasants and teachers and priests right and left. And it was not looked on with approval by our government.
Well, also, I know that at that point you were also the president of the Screen Actors Guild, and you were recommending that each guild member contribute something toward opposing that country's foreign policy,
that was,
right?
That was a total misquoting, misunderstood.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
We gave $25,000 as an initial contribution, which was money collected from private citizens. And it was misreported and misunderstood that this was union money, and it was a total lie. Hmm. Had nothing to do with the union, other than the fact that I was president of the union.
So, but that's what Charlton Heston used to wrest that position from you, though.
He implied that I was acting as president of the union, and I should have disassociated myself more.
Yeah. Do you think maybe you made a mistake in that, or no?
I should have been clear, but it would have been, I mean, it was a few simple words would have, but the enemy, Heston among them, did as much as they could to muddy the waters so that people never really understood, just as you didn't understand when you broached the subject.
No, that's because that's all I've read.
Yeah.
And in fact, if you look at Yahoo right now in the Edward Asner biography, it says that on there.
So oh, it
should,
does?
Yes. So you should actually correct that.
Well, I'll have my assistant check into that.
Yeah, you definitely should do that. It's in the Ed Asner biography over at Yahoo Movies, and it does say that on it. That's the reason I got that. You know, I have to do my homework, but the homework I did is with stuff that isn't correct. But the only one that corrected is you.
Well, thank you for calling that to my attention.
Yeah.
That's the first time I've ever heard that it's actually out there like that.
It says, when Asner suggested that each Guild member contribute to it opposing the country's foreign policy, he clashed head-to-head with Charlton Heston, who wrested Asner's office from him in a highly publicized power play. That's on there right now. So you can take care of that.
That's very meaningful, and I will get on that immediately.
Okay. Now,
thank you for that. I'm amazed that nobody's ever mentioned that to me.
Well, maybe people don't do their homework when they talk to you.
Probably.
I always do before I do my interviews. I want to know exactly what's going on.
Thank you for that.
But, you know, this movie is a great movie. Are there other things you're working on, other projects like Missing Brennan?
We're trying to produce a movie right now, a very wonderful movie written by John Hertzler. Called Dancing with Sancho Panza, and it's a love story that takes place during the Spanish Civil War.
Okay. Now,
another one that deals with a book that's about to a script that's about to come out dealing with Stephen Hawking's wife and the years that she spent as his wife.
Wow.
And a very interesting story, and we have a third film that we hope to produce called The Amazing Mr. Z. And
Amazing Mr. Z, huh?
Pardon?
What would that be about?
It's about a little kid, and there's this old man that this kid thinks is Superman. Little old Jewish guy that he regards as Superman. And the amazing thing is that Mr. Z keep happening that make it hard to disprove that he isn't Superman.
That sounds like a great premise. I like that.
Oh, it's nice.
Yeah, I like that. Now, you said you mentioned your son's in the DVD business, in production and stuff. Has he ever produced you? Have you talked to him about maybe doing something together, a project?
We've worked together in the past on, we produced a film together, a Payback, it was called. It starred Mary Tyler Moore. He assisted me in that. And he's done a couple of documentaries for the History Channel.
Mm-hmm.
And he produced a four-part reality series for MTV.
Hmm.
But we still keep dancing around in terms of possibly doing stuff together.
Maybe he can get involved in that Amazing Mr. Z. That sounds like a cool one.
That is.
I like that. Now, you mentioned politics, and again, the political polarity with George Bush in office seems to be just really pronounced, and this past election was unbelievably political and in a mean way sometimes too. The left was the left, the right was the right, and they were clashing all over the place. How involved are you now in politics? And tell me a little bit about what you're doing at this point with any particular group or a cause.
Is it possible I could put you on hold for a minute? We're still alive, aren't we?
We're still alive, yeah. That would
okay,
be,
then forget it.
That would be a tough thing to do.
Yeah.
I would have to talk to myself.
How involved are we now? Wherever I can to promulgate what I consider the truth, then I will step forward and do it. Right now I'm involved with the Nuclear Information Resource Center system, I should say, trying to promulgate the truth on the evils of nuclear energy and the wastes that are generated by this, and how people have to keep being informed. We just got some great news that Yucca Flats, I believe, is not going to be able to be operative as they have tried to make it so in Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
That train accident the southeast with the chlorine trains is just an example of what can happen in the movement of nuclear waste trains, and what can happen to communities when such. And there will be more and more every time you need to move nuclear waste, and every time you attempt to install a new nuclear plant.
What type of power are you advocating for? Because you can't keep buying oil. What about like windmills or wind power?
Everything but fossil fuels and nuclear. If this government spent as much money and as much time developing the alternative sources of energy that they do in terms of looking for oil and in terms of promulgating nuclear energy, we'd be a lot further ahead in achieving these systems, in my opinion.
They're trying to build a wind turbine that would generate enough electricity to power the entire Cape Cod area. And former environmentalists are all against it because, you know, people like Ted Kennedy has a house down there. He doesn't want to see it.
Well, I know. Well, so we see how personal pleasures sometimes don't make us liberals after all.
Well, I think if you're going to be a liberal, if you're going to really advocate for what you're saying, I mean, you got to support it all the way the other stuff. You got to go into the wind thing.
Of course you do.
Yeah.
And life with our consumption of resources, I mean, the fact that we have 300 million people and we use 25% of the world's resources, there's something wrong with that balance.
Hmm.
I've also been told that there are four states. I think it's either South or North Dakota, Nebraska, Texas. I'm not sure what. Four states in the Midwest, which have enough wind that, if properly handled, could supply energy for the whole country.
It would be amazing. I mean, you know, something. If there was enough money in the wind, that would have been already developed.
If there was what?
Enough money in the wind, they'd be developed already. It's all a matter of who
but
makes the money.
But they haven't put the money there.
Because, well, it's who makes the money, though? The big companies, big oil companies, and all the big corporate conglomerates, they can't make money off the wind, so they're not interested.
Of course.
Yeah,
of course.
It's terrible. But let's tell everybody to go out there and get Missing Brendan. And if you want to check out the movie, there's a great website. It's missingbrendan.com. And that site will give you all the information on the movie and actually where you can get it. It's available in all the stores. So it's an amazing movie. Some really good stuff.
It's a very nice movie. And
it's a family movie. You can all watch it together.
And I have it on best of authority, which is me, that it's well worth watching. I don't push my own face that much, but they won't go wrong with this movie.
I agree with you. I think it's a good family film. I already said this, and in fact, again, with what's going on in Iraq and all the war and all the things that are happening, people sometimes have to see the realities of what war can do.
Yeah. Well, God knows we're suffering from what this war has done to us.
Well, let's hope that it brings peace in the future. We saw Libya lay down their nuclear arms from the direct threats they've got, and who knows, maybe Israel and the Arabs will be at peace and everything will end up all right.
That's one of the few bright signs that's occurring in these recent days.
And let's hope that it's a true thing and that it's not just some illusion like the past has been.
I think it's more substantial than it's been before. I have a feeling.
Well, let's hope that. Let's leave that on a good note.
Peace is starting to take hold.
Well, Ed, it was, as always, a pleasure talking to you.
It's good talking to you, Mark.
And hopefully we can talk again. If there's some other thing you have coming out, please let us know, and we'd love to talk to you again.
That's great.
All right.
And I definitely appreciate what you had to tell me about Yahoo.
Yeah, check that out.
I will.
All right.
Thanks.
It's good to talk to you, Ed.
To you again.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.